Hi, this is Marion Nessel. I'm the Paulette Goddard Professor of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University and a longtime fan of Heritage Radio.
Like Marion, you too can support Heritage Radio Network, a member-based nonprofit radio station operating out of Bushwick, Brooklyn.
I've been on it countless times. I love being interviewed. The interviewers are always really well prepared and fun to talk to about the issues that matter to me the most, about how we can change our food system to one that's healthier for people and the environment. It's just invaluable to have an independent radio station that's dealing with these issues. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful asset.
Support Heritage Radio Network by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate.
Beginning as Balducci's Fruit Stand in Greenwich Village 70 years ago, Baldor Specialty Foods has been curating and delivering the highest quality foods in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Chefs rely on Baldor for the freshest and most seasonal ingredients, along with new and exciting items that you just can't get elsewhere. Baldor's ordering process is designed with a chef's schedule and priorities in mind to get you what you need when you need it. Baldor is the trusted resource and partner for the region's top chefs. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond.
And I'm Claudia Wu.
And we're the founders of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food.
On today's show, we'll be chatting with two chefs following their own paths. While one is leading the charge in the food delivery field, the other is behind the art-inspired culinary pop-up taking place in New York City this summer.
Before we get the details on their delicious undertakings, here's a shout-out to our sponsors. Prince Street, the fresh new podcast with a culinary heart from Dean and DeLuca.
The Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, where you can start your journey to becoming a natural food chef today.
And Baldor Specialty Foods, which curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Our first guest is Chef Soa Davies, who works at a restaurant no one can visit. She's the executive chef at Maple, the delivery-only restaurant in New York City that features a daily rotating menu with dishes created by some of the best chefs around. Maple has raised more than $25 million in venture capital funding and counts Chef David Chang as its chief culinary officer. Soa is here to talk about Maple and her role in helping disrupt the food delivery system. Soa Davies, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you.
So let's start. How did you get involved with Maple?
David actually got me involved with Maple. He called me up and said, hey, I have an idea I want to run by you, and would you come and talk to us about it? And, like, how do you say no to that? So started talking to these guys, and they pitched me this idea of a delivery concept, and I was like, I don't know if I'm the right fit for you guys. I've done fine dining most of my life.
You're fancy. I would think you're too fancy for delivery.
That's exactly what even they say. So I was like, I don't know if this is the right fit. But they're like, well, just talk to us, hear us out, and what makes you excited about food, and let's try to grow together. And so I started telling them, the thing that drives me is making sure people are eating well, cooking for people, sustainable ingredients, and great ingredients in general. So that's kind of the foundation of how we started Maple's menu. Everything, like all the ingredients, all of the ethos behind how we're sourcing, it's based on a farm-to-table restaurant of trying to go direct to the source as much as possible. And when we launched, we even, like, imported our own Portuguese olive oil because it was so hard to find really nice olive oil at an affordable price at the rate that we were using olive oil. So it's just those little things that I think really highlight how we make ourselves different from other delivery companies. Like, we actually think about every ingredient, like a chef would from a small, like, farm-to-table restaurant.
Well, it's funny. When we first met, I remember we were walking down, I don't remember where we met, but we were walking down some street in Manhattan talking, and you were talking about farms.
Yes.
You were working on sourcing product for maple from all these different farms in the area, and I was so impressed by that because I mean, how many people are you feeding on a daily basis?
A lot.
Is that proprietary? Can
a little
answer
bit,
that?
But it's a lot. So, yes, and we're constantly looking to grow. So what we're hoping to do is bring these smaller farmers and then help them grow with us as they come on board.
And you're also trying to do this at a decent price point. I was looking at all the Claudia's ordered from you before.
I think lunch is $12, including tip, and dinner is $15.
It's, on average, $12 for lunch, $15 for dinner. We are playing around with, because of the sourcing, and as we're getting more and more specialized ingredients, we're finding that, especially for dinner, like, I would love to be able to play around with wild salmon. And, of course, it's hard to sell wild salmon at $15. So
when you're making a million meals a day, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So we're going to try to play around with a little bit of, like, certain ingredients that we're getting in specialty and highlight those ingredients and make sure they're getting their due diligence and, like, everyone's getting to taste organic salmon. Not just organic salmon, but like wild salmon and organic produce. And we want to be able to deliver high quality food affordably.
So it has to be weird, though. I mean, you've worked at a lot of restaurants in the past, Le Bernardin being one of the most notable, to not be able to get that same kind of reaction from guests. I mean, you do get reviews, and I'm sure there's a lot of social media for Maple, but you don't get that sort of immediate feedback of being able to, like, peek into the dining room and see what's going on. Tell us how it's different being at Maple.
I think it's different mainly because any of our dishes that go into being on the menu go through such a long process. So it's almost a delayed gratification for sure, where we don't know until we get feedback from our clients or customers saying, oh, we love this, or this really didn't work. So it is a delayed gratification, but the bonus of that is when we really, really hit it out of the park, the feedback is such a deluge of just love. It's so much fun to read through people reacting very positively to a dish that you've been working on, or it's become a child of yours as it's gone through this process. And so, like, there's like a whole group of us in the R&D team that's like cheering on something as it launches. And the perfect example of, we work through the development process with Mark Ladner just recently. And
Mark from Del Posto.
Yeah, guest chef. Right?
He just did a guest chef menu takeover at Maple. And we worked through Mark's recipes and launched them. And the feedback was just so great from the customers. And we were just all so excited about that.
Yeah. So they ask you to rate when you get a delivery, the next email, they'll ask you to rate the food, basically.
It's almost immediate.
Yeah, you almost get immediate feedback.
Yeah. So it's like one of those things where you're watching the feedback channel and going, yay.
So the camaraderie in the kitchen is the same?
Yes, very much so. Of course, there's a little bit of, well, we're a much larger operation than a restaurant, so there are more people involved, but the camaraderie is the same. Team is the biggest thing for us at Maple, and teamwork and working together.
So how would you describe the culture, or what are you doing to build a distinct Maple culture with your team?
Well, when we first started Maple, we were very cognizant of the fact that I didn't want to build the typical restaurant kitchen culture of just competitiveness. And there's so much typically testosterone in a kitchen, or any kitchen in general. So we wanted to make sure people loved what they're doing, loved coming into work, and we wanted to provide a very easy and fun environment. And hopefully we've been able to accomplish that, but it more and more, like, we focus on making sure people are excited about what they're doing and how they grow within the company. There is a young lady that started with us from day one, and she started out as my assistant at the very beginning, and I had to beg for her. Like, I randomly met her through another chef, and I took her on as an assistant for a shoot, and then I was like, okay, I love her.
So you had to beg for an assistant, or you had to beg for this person to be your assistant?
No, I had to beg for this particular person, because the founders were like, oh, we can get you an assistant from, like, Harvard, or we can get you an assistant from Yale, or anywhere. Like, she seems really young and green. She had just graduated from college, and I was like, no, I want her. And she started... After starting out as an assistant, she basically made herself so indispensable to the team that she's now, like, organizing, like, how all of our recipes and how all of our data lives, and just making sure that everyone knows what they're doing at any given point in time during the cooking process. So, like, she has such a large role from such a small role. So we're very, very encouraging of that kind of mentality of growth and learning at Maple.
I also read that you're paying, it seems like you're trying to do a lot of things that are socially mindful, which is great. I read that delivery people get $14 an hour plus health benefits.
Absolutely. So I think the most delivery people are on 1099s, mm-hmm. and we knew we wanted to be a fully vertical company where everyone worked for us and they were getting W-2, they were getting health benefits. And again, going back to Maple's idea of it being a team company. And so focusing on that, it just makes sense to give people health benefits and a livable wage.
I mean, for people who work in restaurants or the food world, they know that that's not the norm.
Correct. And we wanted to make a change on that.
And then let's also talk, I know this is important to Claudia too, the environmental part of it. I mean, one of the reasons I'm not a huge proponent of takeout or delivery is all the packaging. I mean, when my last job, where some of us worked, everybody in the office would get delivery at lunchtime. And the garbage at the end of lunchtime was enough to break your heart.
Sure, sure.
So I love that Maple has the no utensils option on the website and the app, and you use fully compostable plant fiber packaging. How much was this part of the conversation in the beginning?
It was from the very start of the conversation. We very much focus on the packaging was a big deal, and we spent a lot of time going through many, many different iterations of the packaging to the point where now we're even developing our own packaging with plant-based materials. So it's something that we focused on a lot, and we spend quite a bit on our packaging to make sure it's environmentally friendly. And even so, people still say, oh, like, it's such a shame to throw out those beautiful maple bags. And I say to them, reuse them. Take them to the farmer's market. Take them to the grocery store. Absolutely reuse them.
Yeah, I'm shocked at, like, the high quality of, like, all your packaging and all your branding. Your interface is so beautiful, too.
Again, that's our team.
Yeah.
We have an amazing
you
job.
Spent that $25 million well.
Very well,
that's
yes.
What that says.
It looks great.
Thank you.
You know, David Chang, your chief culinary officer, right? That's his title.
Yes.
He has been talking a lot about the challenges faced by restaurants
Correct.
These days. I heard him recently on Bill Simmons' podcast. I think he basically said he's over restaurants, and the things that excite him right now are delivery services and cooking at home. And then he wrote that piece for GQ called The Earthquake That's About to Hit Restaurants. And a lot of people talked about that piece. Dave seems down on restaurants. What's going on?
I don't think he's so much down. I think there's more to food than just restaurants. And I agree with him. I think encouraging people to eat when they want, where they want, and how they want is a great thing. And David's all about that. And, like, I can't speak for him, but speaking for Maple and for myself, the fact that, like, we're encouraging people to eat at the park and take their lunches out of the office when it's beautiful and sunny. I think that's a that's empowering.
So from your perspective, I mean, you've worked in restaurants. So what, now that you've got both sides of this, you know, the traditional restaurant experience and now this, I don't know, what do we want to call this, a virtual restaurant. What are the challenges facing the traditional restaurants from your perspective?
I think the traditional restaurants, they're limited to how many people they can seat in the restaurant, and they're limited to only being able to buy a certain number of products. So getting to a point where we can feed many more people means our buying power is greater, and then therefore we can set a standard of how we want things grown, which a little restaurant has a hard time doing. So if we go to a farm that's like conventionally growing tomatoes, but we want those tomatoes to be organic or heirloom, because of the buying power that we're growing, we can do that. And they'll take us seriously, for example. And so I think that's kind of a very powerful tool for virtual restaurants, or like getting outside of the restaurant. It gives you more power and it gives you more opportunities for growth.
I think, you know, in reading and listening to what Dave was saying, I got the impression that part of what he was talking about, or maybe a big chunk of what he was talking about, was quality of life for his staff.
Correct.
And it sounds like we touched on earlier with the $14 an hour, you know, for the delivery people plus health benefits, that's top of mind at Maple.
Exactly. Quality of life is should be top of mind for everyone. And I think, and being able to say we're giving you a healthy, sustainable option for lunch and dinner for more, as many people as we can reach, I think that also speaks to like quality of life for our customers.
Yeah, and I don't think you guys deliver on weekends, right?
We just started doing Sunday.
I was gonna say.
Sunday dinners.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because again, Sunday dinners should be fun and easy, and
so you don't have to work Saturday nights. You can go to weddings and things like that.
Exactly.
All the stuff that other chefs can't do. So tell us about you. Where did you grow up? How did you get into food?
I grew up all over. My father was in the military, and my mother, I was born in Korea and then came over with my parents and then have been like traveled all over the world. Then I went to college at NYU, and after college didn't know what to do, as most college graduates.
What did you major in?
Marketing. And didn't know what to do, so, and I love to eat, so I started taking some culinary classes, and that led me to going to Vail for a ski season. And in order to pay for my ski pass, I worked for Vail Resorts on the mountain as like a line cook. And
I thought you were going to say ski bunny.
Well, line cook. No, okay. As a line cook, flipping burgers, actually. That was my very first job on the mountain, and it lasted about 2 weeks because I didn't know what I was doing. But then this local chef, David Walford, took me in, and basically, like, he started me out in Garmage and taught me almost everything I know. And then during the off season, he would send me out to different stages all over, and like just instilled this love of food in me. And that's how I ended up doing what I'm doing.
So how did you wind up at Le Bernardin?
Eric had come out to Colorado to do a guest chef event at the restaurant where we worked at Splendido in Beaver Creek. And we connected, and he was impressed by how well we did at Splendido. And after, I was at Splendido for 9 years, and after 9 years I was looking to move back to the city. And so I reached out to him and said, hey, I'm moving back to New York. Let me know if you hear of any jobs. And he's like, well, come in and talk to me. And I did, and the rest is history. I ended up spending over 6 years at Le Bernardin.
And you had a really interesting job there.
I did. I was very, extremely lucky.
Tell us what it entailed.
So I started out in the kitchen, worked my way through all of the stations, and then ended up being in charge of all of the research and development for the menu at Le Bernardin and any new dishes. So working with Eric directly to create new dishes, create new sauces, think through new techniques, working with technology, and that led to working with his consulting projects, and then we ended up writing two cookbooks together and producing a couple of seasons of an Emmy-winning TV show called Avec Eric.
And you have an Emmy.
I do.
Where's your Emmy?
It is currently sitting on the floor of my apartment.
Doorstop?
Yes. It's a very nice doorstop.
So you seem like a very chill, balanced human being. Is that what these chefs see in you? Is that why they gravitate toward you?
I try. I definitely try. If I'm raising my voice, there's something seriously wrong.
How often does that happen?
Not often. Okay. Not often at all. Especially, like I said, our team is so amazing. It's hard to not be impressed by them.
What do you do in the off hours to stay chill?
Lately, I've been gardening. My husband and I purchased a home out in Shelter Island, so we've been ripping up the lawn and doing some gardening, so that's been my downtime.
Fun.
Very fun.
Very cool. Okay, well, I think we're going to pass you over to Claudia for the speed round.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
How do you like your eggs?
Scrambled.
What's in your refrigerator?
Right now I have pea stock, English peas, hemp milk, lots of different fruits, kale, and I think a various amount of different condiments, mostly hot sauce.
What's your favorite kitchen tool?
Fork.
A fork?
Yeah. It's the first time anyone said fork.
Is there anything you absolutely...
Wait, she has to explain why fork.
Because you can eat with the fork. And you can stir, you can flip, you can turn things, you can whisk. You can even cut things with the fork.
Very true, very true. Is there anything you absolutely will not eat?
Tripe, I won't eat again. I've tried on multiple occasions. There's just something about the aftertaste that throws me.
It's all the stuff that goes through it, I guess. do you have a worse job? It doesn't sound like, well, besides the flipping burgers job.
I don't. I've been incredibly, incredibly lucky.
Last question, where do you want to travel to next?
I think Vietnam.
Great.
Vietnam's great.
I support that.
Yeah. Claudia was just there earlier this year.
Very briefly, though. I didn't spend enough time, but it was amazing.
Yeah, I'd love to go and eat all the food.
The best food.
Yes.
Absolutely. Soa, if people want to check out what you're doing, unfortunately, right now you have to live in Manhattan.
Yes.
Right? You're not delivering outside of Manhattan yet.
Not yet.
But I would imagine Maple has pretty major world domination plans and will be coming to...
Well,
a future city.
We hope
soon.
To cover Manhattan, and after that, we'll see.
Maybe Brooklyn.
Yes.
I'm going to make a crazy prediction and say maybe Brooklyn. Soa, thank you. It was really great to finally have you on the show. Have a wonderful summer.
You as well.
Thank you. We will be right back with Chef Nina Clemente.
Today's episode is brought to you by Prince Street, Dean and DeLuca's monthly podcast dedicated to the delicious and infinite connections between people and food. Each new Prince Street podcast features special guests, field reports, and meals from around the world. Editor-in-Chief Howie Kahn hosts the show, featuring segments from correspondents such as Griffin Dunn, Jay McInerney, Eden Grinspan, and Sierra Tischgart. Download Prince Street on iTunes and online at livefromprincestreet.com. Prince Street, a fresh new podcast with a culinary heart. Welcome back. Our next guest was born in Italy and raised in New York City, but has spent much of her career working in Southern California. Nina Clemente first got hooked on the magic of local seasonal ingredients as a child, watching her mother make Italian feasts for the Clemente clan and their artist friends. Fast forward, and she found herself cooking at Osteria Mazza alongside chef Nancy Silverton and at the Michelin 3-star Piazza Duomo in Alba, Italy. Now, Nina is back in New York City with an art-inspired pop-up at the Standard Hotel Plaza. Nina, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you so much for having me.
And welcome back to New York City. It's been a while since we've had you, huh?
Nice to be home, for sure.
I mean, all your family is still here, right? Your
dad. That is correct, yeah.
How long are you planning to be here?
I'll be here through September.
And that's how long the pop-up will be?
Yeah.
If you guys haven't gone to the plaza at the Standard Hotel, it's amazing. They have a wood fire
we
burning
have a wood
oven.
Burning oven, yeah.
Lots of like pizza going mm-hmm. on there.
Some healthy salads too for those gluten-free folks.
And this is your first time playing with a wood-fired oven?
Oh, you're yeah.
You're telling us that's major.
Yeah, you know, I think it's in the blood a little bit. Having grown up, spending my summers in Amalfi where all the pizza was wood-burning oven. And that was kind of the most enticing element of the project was this new opportunity to play with wood-burning oven.
It must be hot, though. Oh, my God.
Well, it was a nice source of heat in, April and May when it was actually strangely freezing in New York. But, now it's definitely keeps us warm.
So are you literally cooking outside on
yes.
the plaza? Wow.
Yes. When I tell friends to come visit me, I tell them, just follow the wood-burning oven smoke, and I'll be right under it.
Now, you're also a mom.
I am
so
also a mom.
You have a beautiful daughter, Indigo. If people have their Ruth Reichel copy of Cherry Bomb, we did a beautiful story. I think it was a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Great pictures. Our friend Rose wrote the story. And your daughter could not be cuter.
She's, just because I'm her mother, it's hard to say she's the cutest thing ever, but she is a pretty incredible little child, yeah.
So how are you handling the mom chef thing?
It's definitely a challenge. Most recently, my daughter told my father, her grandfather, mommy doesn't live with me anymore, which was pretty pretty hardcore. So I shifted my hours a little bit, but it's that chef life is long hours, and I like to think that I have a new family here at the Standard, that I hired some great people, and I had to relinquish a little bit of that power and let them thrive and on their own a little bit, which was great because it gave me a little more time with my daughter. She thinks I moved back in, so
that's
worked out for everyone. And she comes often, I have to say, and occasionally you'll see her sitting on Expo with me, slapping out dough really, really well.
Oh, good. You got to train them young.
Train them young.
And we heard that you're looking for help if anyone needs a job for the summer.
I think I have my husband's niece watches her at night in that sort of shifty, funny hours where, I come home quite late. And, good help is hard to come by.
We do have to say that the article that Rose wrote about you, we had more people pitch us about you than anybody.
Wow.
When we started the magazine and people started to realize they could send us pitches about different things, so many people sent us pitches on you, and I this is the first time we've ever met. I mean, I think you and Claudia know each other, but I was like, what is it about this Nina Clemente girl that everybody wants to write about her?
Oh, that's really sweet.
And then finally Rose, who Rose Abadaka is one of our contributors. She did some great stories in the California issue. She's based in LA. She has a terrific shop called A Plus R.
My favorite.
It's a houseware store. She gave it a shout out. So finally, when Rose sent us the pitch, I was like, okay, Rose knows everybody. Rose has great taste in human beings. And I was like, if Rose is pitching us, we've got to do this.
Well, it was really an honor, actually. I'd just gone through a home birth, as you guys covered, or I should say Rose covered. So it's really, it's really amazing moment. To just in my career, and LA has been so good to me. You know, I think as a New Yorker going to LA, one of the first things I heard was, welcome, you're from New York, welcome to the gold rush, because, you know, we really hit the ground running, and I got there at the age of 26, and I like to think I really hit the ground running, and full circle, it was such an honor. I've been a big fan of Cherry Bomb for a long time, so...
Can we talk about the home birth a little bit?
Sure.
Because it wasn't, sure. I mean, I don't know what a traditional home birth is.
Did you have a tub or something?
I did have like sort of a blow up pool. but my daughter, you know, I think for me, the home birth was, aside from my fear of hospitals, which overall and very sort of natural lifestyle, eating well, it kind of all came full circle, no drugs, you know. 36 hours in, I was like, get me some drugs. But at that point, it was too late. So, and she was born in a stream of olive oil, which I also find very romantic. And
you might have to repeat that
moment.
Because I have a feeling our listeners are like, wait, she was born in a stream of olive oil?
I don't want to get too graphic, but basically,
I don't think we have any male listeners, so okay,
cool.
It's okay.
My midwife was literally, as the baby, I think we have this image of maybe from television or where it's like screaming, like, you know, birth is this horrible experience, and it's actually, it's not the most comfortable situation by all means, but I mean, it's really, they come into the world and they take their time and they come when they're good and ready, and the baby was like, you know, kind of coming in and out. It takes a while. It's not just like, boop, baby comes out. So my midwife was just pouring olive oil to help
lubricate
the transition out into the world, and it helped.
But I, we can joke about the olive oil now, but I think what you just described really also covers your approach to food.
100%.
And I think California is a perfect place for you. You know, we just did that whole issue celebrating California. I mean, first and foremost, the farms and the beautiful produce, and I know how important that is to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, growing up in New York, we're exposed to so much food, and I was really lucky to have these amazing parents that worked very hard so that we could spend our summers in my mom's hometown of Amalfi. So I grew up in these winters in New York still having great food my mom cooked every night, you know, but the produce kind of had no flavor, the fruit, nothing. It all looked perfect, but it really had no flavor. It was all being shipped in. So I'd spend my summers in Italy where we have this house, you know, 200 stone steps up in this little village on the sea. And they have this tiered, my mom has this tiered garden where I was literally plucking fresh vegetables out of the ground, arugula, tomatoes, eggplants, these amazing lemons. And so it was always kind of traumatic for me to come back to New York. And I can say that until I moved to California when I was 26, I'd never eaten a tomato in New York after my first attempt, because it literally,
well, they used to be, I remember growing up here, they were pink.
Yeah.
And they came in like a little cellophane thing.
Yeah.
I'm the same. I think I was well into my 20s before I really had a ripe seasonal tomato.
And going to LA for me at that age, I think what really drew me in and kept me was these farmers markets. It was the most magical, you know, it was really an establishing relationship with the farmers. Even now when I go to the green market, there's some amazing farmers, but, you know, it's a brutal lifestyle, especially on the East Coast. So I remember my first experience and asking, oh, you know, can I sample an apple? And they were like, absolutely not. I was like, I'm sorry, what? You know, or another time I like plucked a piece of wild arugula and ate it, and like 10 people around me started screaming at me because I didn't use the tongs, or, you know, it's just like such a different, it's really hard here. And I know it's hard, you know, farmers, I think it's one of the hardest lifestyles wherever you are. But in California, it was just like being reborn or maybe reliving my childhood and in the space of such an urban landscape and being able to have access to that year round.
Yeah, it's the promised land of produce out there.
It really is.
And you've also taken a big anti-GMO stand.
Yes, I am 100%. You know, it's just mind-blowing that we have to think so much before actually buying things. You know, even having a daughter now, I you know, my parents, not GMOs are around since the 90s, so it's like my parents didn't have to think about this. You know, I think also I don't want to, you know, I'm not solely organic. I've now established relationships with farmers where, you know, it's a label. I really, and also if you're eating lots of fruits and vegetables, and you know, it's not as intense, but just this element of packaged food and how accessible it is and how it makes cooking quote unquote easier, but it's terrifying what they're putting into the food. And it's just heartbreaking that we have to, you know, like, even me, that I know so much about it, I'm still like, I have to analyze labels, you know. Once I see like more than three items listed, I'm like, I put it back.
Yeah, that's what Claudia always says when we talk about packaged food and things like that. You're like, if it's got that many ingredients, just put it back.
Yeah,
buy things that don't require labels.
I know, but it's also our, you know, being a mom, it's like this element of like a working mom as well. I know this element of convenience, it falls through the cracks, but I do think that get some vegetables, chop them up, you know, and also it's funny when my daughter, who's almost three, she eats vegetables and, you know, and I've kind of trained her now. She's like, Mommy, nature's candy, you know, and it's like, sounds really corny. And then other people are like, wow, your daughter's eating a piece of celery, or, you know, and I'm like, yeah, you know, like, it's not like, I think we dumb down or what are, you know, our kids' palates. So, you know, they like seasoning. I started when I was making baby food for her. I was putting cardamom and, you know, spice, cumin, like spicing up her food. They like, you know, it's an experience for them, just like it is for us. So this element, I think we just got to give our kids a little more opportunity to thrive in that sense. And also one thing I do with her is I tell her it's okay to spit something out, which I think so many parents are like, oh, don't spit it out. You know, and I'm like, no, listen, if you taste it, you really don't like it, you can spit it out. It's okay. You know, I have a napkin here ready. And 80%, 90% of the time, she tastes it and she likes it. And that other 10%, you know, she spits it out. And I'm like, okay, you know, you really don't like that. But, you know, so just letting them have a little more fun with the food.
I heard recently on the radio that if you describe something to a child as healthy, they most likely will not like it. But if you describe it as delicious, that's different. Or if, you know, just give it a positive spin. Don't say it's healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. But also teaching them young that healthy is actually good for the, you know, more than just healthy, which is so general, being like, this makes your bones strong, or, you know, your hair longer, or whatever, you know, is more enticing or they're into. You just kind of describe it in that sense and they'll give it a chance, you know.
Indigo has really curly hair.
She does.
And my grandmother told me when I was really young that I needed to eat the crust on my bread because it would make my hair curlier. And I was like, I don't want curly hair. Everybody else had straight hair. So literally to this day, I don't eat the crust on bread.
Oh my God. Don't share a loaf of bread with Carrie, because you'll just be left with crust.
I actually am okay with that because I prefer the crust, so we can go out to eat anytime, Carrie.
Good. We'll make a date. You know, obviously you've talked about family a lot, whether it's Indigo or your parents. Family's hugely important to you.
100%. Yeah. You know, I think I grew up in a bit. I have an older sister, I have two younger brothers, and we really, that sense of dinner at the table was really a full-on experience and a very memorable one. I try to do that with my daughter and my husband. You know, we really just try to sit down and enjoy that one meal a day. With life being so crazy, it's really important to kind of sit down. You know, at the time it was beepers off, but now, you know, it's like no phones at the table, really just enjoying that moment, you know.
But I'm curious about you as a teenager growing up in New York City. You know, mom's making dinner, you know, your dad's a famous artist, your mom's a costume designer, and really one of the most beautiful women in the world. I mean, your mom's just gorgeous. I would imagine it's hard to enforce weekly, you know, weeknight dinner when you've got a teenager. How'd your mom do it, and how did you react when you were the age when you just want to be out with your friends?
Well, it's funny because I never, you know, it wasn't really an option. It wasn't like, hey guys, you know, tonight we're going to make dinner. It was like every night at 7 o'clock, we all sat down and we had dinner. And I also, having spent my summers in this tiny seaside town, my parents were very lax about going out. So on the weekends, you know, after dinner around 8:39, I was 14 and I could, you know, scurry off into Brooklyn and, you know, whatever, drink 40s with my friends. but at that point in my life, there was no option. It was happening every night. You know, we ate out maybe once, twice a month. It wasn't, you know, optional. So that makes it easier.
Did you grow up in Soho?
I grew up in the West Village.
Okay.
So when I was really young, we were living on Broadway and Great Jones in the 80s, and then moved to McDougal and Bleecker in 89.
What restaurants were even open back then?
Well, it's
it was Jerry's,
funny. Yeah,
like
Odeon, Mr. Chow's when it was like a big art scene. And then Bar PT, which was around the corner from our house, which now is, you know, phenomenon. And but we love Giovanni. We grew up eating there. And to this day, it's like the one place where it's like, where are we going to go? Oh, PT. You know, it's just a walk over and actually can just sit down versus the hour-long waits that now happen there.
And your parents are involved somehow with the Standard Plaza, right?
Yeah, my dad designed a beautiful scarf. And then my mom helped out with the menus. And it was just a sweet sort of family affair in the beginning where I tortured them to bug them until they kind of helped out. They're so artistic, so it's nice to have that little inclination in the whole project.
What are you going to do after? Come back to LA?
I'm going back to LA in September. I'm working with the folks from The Smile for a potential project going on the West Coast.
Nice.
That I'll elaborate on in future issues, perhaps.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah.
Do you miss Los Angeles, or is it just fun being here because you grew up here?
You know, I was ready to come home for a minute. It would have been 10 years in September that I've been in LA, so I was ready for some seasons and family and all of that. I love LA for the farmers markets. I love LA for the sunny day, the chronic sunny days. But you know, whenever someone asks me to compare the two, they're so different that I don't even try, you know.
Do you go out to eat much in LA?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think every chef will tell you. Thank God my husband cooks, because there's not a lot of cooking happening for my daughter all the time and for my poor significant other. Yeah, I eat out a lot in LA.
Where are your hangouts?
I mean, we always pop in Squirrel, or I should say drive by to see how long the line is. Jessica's amazing. And then we typically go to Korean Barbecue. That's our family spot, Parks. And then I love in Venice, you know, Travis is incredible. So anything, any food he touches, Giusta, Jelena.
Oh my God,
anything he touches is amazing. And then my hubby actually just opened Wallflower in Venice, too, on Rose, so that's amazing.
Oh, tell us about that.
It's spectacular food, really great ambiance, and he's part owner, and it's just a really great spot. And they have the only liquor license on Rose, actually, full liquor license, which is insane. I don't know how the neighbors feel about it, but...
Where on Rose? Because I know you've got
it's like three
Moon
blocks,
Juice, you've got...
Three blocks down
Cafe Gratitude.
Towards the water from Whole Foods.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the old, like, Ace. They had the sign outside, Ace.
Do you ever go to Cafe Gratitude?
I haven't been
Not to put you on the spot. But I'm only asking that because the place cracks me up so much.
Yeah.
Because when you order, you don't say, I want the sweet potato tacos. You say, they have crazy names for everything.
Yeah.
Like, I am fulfilled.
Yeah.
I am grateful. I am...
Do you hear about the controversy with the owners, though, lately? They started a farm to grow produce with animals. And I think they were vegan for many, many years. But, you know, as part of the farm, animals get old and, like, they die and stuff. So the owner started eating meat and people found out about it and were outraged.
Oh, I hadn't heard about that. All right. You sure about that?
Yes, I just read about it.
Sure we should maybe fact check before we declare
blow them.
Yeah, carnivores. But anyway, that always cracked me up about that place that you would have to order that way. And I remember telling my boyfriend that I heard they were coming to New York, and he was like, no fucking way.
I know.
He said, New Yorkers are not going to say, I would like a side of, I feel grateful.
Yeah, I could agree with that. They are what they are. They have a great BLT with this mesquite smoked bacon that I always liked.
Fake bacon.
Yeah, totally fake bacon.
No, I'm paranoid.
Pigs on the farm.
But you also worked with Nancy Silverton for a while, and we're big fans.
That was one of my first experiences. And when I went to LA, nobody, you know, I started catering right away, and then I realized I really needed some sort of foundation. So I applied to many, many restaurants, and at the time, everybody was like, we don't want this wide-eyed, young, eager, you know, girl that wants to learn. Like, we need a line cook and know what they're doing. But thankfully, I could, you know, by sight recognize the 10 mozzarella varietals and salumi, you know, so.
Wait, there are 10 mozzarella varietals?
Oh, yeah. It might be even more,
I did not know that.
What does that even
mean? There's bufala.
So there's like bufala mozzarella, there's burrata, burricotta, smoked mozzarella, caciocavallo, scamorza. There's like, I mean, the list goes on. Fior di latte. Bocconcini, you know, the different shapes too. So they gave me a shot. Basically, I was very low on the totem pole. I was like the bread girl when I started, really cutting bread and toasting it. But I worked at the same station with Nancy at the mozzarella bar, which is very much my ode to Nancy, is this sort of bar that I've done at the Standard Plaza. And it was just incredible. She was an incredible leader, and just having her around just instilled so much in me and really gave me that drive. And a female chef, you know, for me, it's really been, my experiences with female chefs have been incredible, really lucky in that sense.
Nancy seems so centered when she's at the mozzarella bar at, how do you say it, Osteria?
Osteria, yeah.
We're just going to have you read an Italian menu next time you're here, because everything sounds so pretty when you pronounce it. But just watching her, so still, you almost don't even know she's the boss. I mean, it's clear she commands a lot of respect back there, but everybody's just focused, quiet.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the ease and grace with which she performs every task, it was mesmerizing to me, you know, seeing the tickets come in. You hear like all these tickets coming in, and just like the steady pace and the elegance, and just never, you know, full Marnie head to toe, and just always just impeccable. You know, I've never seen that woman frazzled, no matter, you know, we would do 350 covers a night, and it was just like never out of, you know, just, it was incredible. I sometimes, you know, when the tickets start coming out at the Standard Plaza, and I'm like, start kind of that moment of like, and I just have to like recenter, think of Nancy, and go back to trying to perceive to be graceful in those times. Yeah.
So tell us some of the stuff on the menu at the, we talked about the pizza.
Yes.
So for folks who are going to be in the city this summer and can visit.
Yeah, so I have a really good albacore tuna salad poached in olive oil with aromatics, and it's sort of flaked, if you will, with fennel and lots of basil and parsley. I use that really not just like as a sprig of garnish, but as actual flavor. Some orange segments to give you a little burst of citrus and brightness, and some Kalamata olives and some Fresno chilies, little nod to Cali. And then I have a really nice wild bass crudo that I beet cure. That's a pretty beautiful dish with just some herbs scattered on top and a citrus vinaigrette.
Did you say beet cure? So
yeah,
it's pink?
Yeah, it's vibrant pink on the perimeter. And
what does that mean, the
white
beet cure? I'm not familiar
so
with that.
So we just fresh press beets and a little gin in there, salt, sugar, juniper, and orange and lemon zest. And then we coat it. The fish in this sort of cure, we let it sit for 2 days. So the perimeter, it's a crudo, but not really, because the perimeter is cured. So technically it's cooked, but the inside is still raw. And it's sliced paper thin and sort of fanned out and drizzled with these vibrant green herbs, a little citrus vinaigrette.
Sounds
beautiful.
Have
you been in yet? You have to come eat.
We've been recipe testing for our cookbook.
I know.
And it's been so painful.
Our diets have been very strange.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I will say this, when the cookbook comes out, it will be the most thoroughly tested cookbook in the history of cookbooks.
I can only imagine.
But it's been a challenge.
I've had to make cheesecake like 3 times.
You've been very dedicated to nailing that cheesecake
recipe.
Yes,
I am.
Well, you guys bring in your leftovers. And I'll feed you a nice
You might
nice
not want our leftovers.
Meal.
We had poor Burn, our interns in the studio. We had so many recipe fails the other day. It was really just,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I'm sure, hopefully mine doesn't fall into that category. My 3 quarts of olive oil.
Well, you know what we've learned? Chefs don't write recipes that normal people can follow.
Oh, 100%. When I was sending it to you guys, I was trying to like vet it best I could. And I was like, how do I do this?
And it's
so
funny. It's just like, it's not a language you work in. And it's really been an interesting process for us trying to decipher, decode, you know, et cetera. And I, you know, I'd always heard that chefs were terrible recipe writers. And I was always loath to kind of recipe test stuff that chefs had written because I thought it was disrespectful.
No, it's good. I mean, for me, it was just sending it over. I was like, how do I translate this into the home? You know, it's not like I'm going to send you everything in grams. I might have actually, but
we have problems.
I'm like a handful, or, you know, it's like,
you
I'm like,
be the only one.
Yeah, you're not the only one.
I just realized it's, we're running over time. Right over. So we need to do a quick speed round with you.
Okay, speed round. Let's go.
Mimi Sheraton.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
How do you like your eggs?
Sunny side up.
What's in your refrigerator?
A lot of food.
See, so you do cook at home, no?
I am a very hungry child. Yes.
Oh, yeah. What's your favorite kitchen tool?
Kitchen tool. A chef knife.
Is there anything you won't eat?
Oh, God, I really don't like lamb. I know it's terrible.
That's fine. I don't like lamb either.
Oh, good.
What's the worst job you've ever had?
I was a Dr. Pepper girl, where I drove around New York City and gave away free Dr. Peppers.
Oh, God.
I was very young.
And last question, where do you want to travel to next?
I would like to go to Vietnam.
Oh, good. So Zoe said the same thing.
No, yeah, Zoe wants to go to Vietnam.
You guys can go together.
Great place to go.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks
ladies.
For coming.
Thank you, Nina.
So we'll be right back with Mimi Sheraton's 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die.
Were you into avocado toast before any of your friends? Do you know how to whip up some cashew cream? And do you make your own almond milk? If so, you're our kind of person, and you might be interested in the classes at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, located in the heart of Manhattan. Founded in 1977, NGI is the first culinary school dedicated to healthy cooking to be accredited nationally. Their professional chef's training program is offered full and part-time, and several of our favorite chefs are alumni, including Dirt Candy's Amanda Cohen, Alyssa Wagner of Dimes, and Chloe Coscarelli of By Chloe. Visit the NGI website to learn how you can transform your life and your career.
Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton. I'm the author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die. Here's one to get you started. Mariscata in salsa verde, shellfish sauté in green sauce. Glistening and alive, fresh from the sea, shellfish such as mussels, clams, shrimp, and squid get an aromatic transformation in the Spanish dish from the earthy flavorsome duo of garlic and parsley. The mingling of these two ingredients lends character to a basic steaming liquid of white wine and strong seafood stock. The result is gently cooked shellfish in a satiny green sauce with a tantalizing and intense aroma. Many protein and green sauce dishes are found throughout the Mediterranean, and they have become especially popular on menus in the States, where the formula seems to be replicated in nearly every Spanish-themed restaurant. Salsa verde itself is a typical dish of the Basque and Galician regions, often gracing merluza, the fish that is known as hake in Spain and cod in Italy. No matter which fish is used, it is complemented by the sauce. Add some good crusty bread and a chilled white wine for complete enjoyment.
Thanks, Mimi. Be sure to pick up Mimi's book, 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, at your favorite indie bookstore. Thank you to our sponsors for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb.
Baldur Specialty Foods curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Learn what Baldur can do for your business today at baldurfood.com.
Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. Start your journey to become a natural food chef today by visiting ngihca.edu.
and Prince Street, a fresh podcast with a culinary heart. For more, visit livefromprincestreet.com or download the Prince Street podcast from iTunes.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
You're the bomb.
Hi, I'm Lena, and I run the food Instagram account, The Sweet Life of Lena. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Giada De Laurentiis. Not only does she cook bomb, but she looks bomb. Serious beauty goals right there.